Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Sam in the Morning with Rachel, exclusively on LA Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the show. Today is Wednesday, October 4th. Rachel is here.
Hello.
I'm here. And we got a couple great guests we'll bring on in just a moment. Rachel.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm all right.
So you're going to be in Vegas doing shows.
I am. I'm back in Vegas doing shows this weekend, Friday and Sunday, at Bonkers Comedy Club at the Hard Rock Hotel and Casino. I've never performed there. Supposedly, it's amazing. I hear they have like 200 seats, so... Not nervous at all.
That'd be nice, you know?
I mean, we'll see. I think it'll be great. It'll honestly be a good time. Anything I can do to bring humor to, you know, any difficult times, respectfully, that's what I want to do.
So that's what you do best.
Make some people laugh.
Yeah, there you go.
Embarrass myself, but either way.
We need to laugh.
Mm-hmm.
But what's his name canceled his tour?
Jason Aldean.
Yes, he canceled the rest of his shows. I can understand. I mean, I would have been totally shaken if I were him.
Yeah, you know? I mean, he also got a different person. I mean, he was a part of it in very much a way that he was also being shot at. I mean, he was at the stage. Right. He saw people die before his eyes. I mean, I would need some time to recuperate and kind of gather my thoughts and,
You know, my question is, how could the guy, I mean, he used machine guns, mm-hmm. right? Like automatic weapons. Yeah. How could he shoot it so far? I thought maybe we'll talk to our guest in just a moment, because he always knows more than I do.
Right.
But my question is, you know, usually when you have a sniper, it's a sniping gun, you know? It's not like a machine gun, because those can't be accurate. I don't even know if they have the range, but apparently they do to reach.
Right. I mean, I don't know. I'm not a gun person. I know very little about guns, despite how I look. But I will say that... I will say that this is a man who had a lot of guns. He had, and the fact that this was not alarming to anyone. I mean, who needs, I don't have 19 pairs of anything. I don't even have 19 pairs of shoes. Like, because I just simply cannot use that amount of shoes. I mean, there's no reason for it.
Right.
But whatever he had, he also manipulated the weapon to do something else. But that was designed to cause a lot of chaos in a short amount of time. I mean, these guns are weapons of mass destruction, as the great Steve Wolfson, District Attorney of Las Vegas, said. Mm. So I think that this was calculated. I mean, he was holed up there for 4 days. I don't know how he got, you know, there's a lot of questions. And I think we talked about this yesterday, and I am experiencing this as well, and probably a lot of other people are comparing this to the same feeling they felt after 9/11, because with massacre and destruction, this scheme of things, we want answers. And sometimes we don't have answers for the tough questions because we don't want to accept. I mean, we sit here, we're around good people. We don't want to accept that someone who we pass by on the street is capable of doing something so terrible. Right. But the fact is, there are people out there who do this.
Right.
And it transcends, like I said, race, color, religion, you know, political belief. People from, you know, I think more so than anything in this country, we need to talk about mental health. Because, you know, we're sick right now. We're not healthy. Our minds are not right, whatever that means. And I'm not an expert. I'm not a doctor.
But why would you say our? I mean, these are like a few people, you know. I mean, I'm surprised it doesn't happen more often.
Well, let me tell you. Can I give you my explanation?
Yeah.
Apparently, he was on Valium. Mm-hmm. He was taking an anti-anxiety. From my personal background, I've been on anti-anxieties and depression medication, which I've come off of because, in my personal opinion, I think often sometimes they just don't work for people, or they have certain side effects, just like taking the wrong, just like when people are allergic to medications, penicillin. I'm allergic to certain penicillins and mm-hmm. some I'm not, you know, people have wrong. There's chemicals up there, and these are chemicals that we're putting, and sometimes the chemicals just don't mix.
Right.
So I think if that is true and he was taking Valium for anti-anxiety, that to me implies that he had a mental health issue.
Okay, I agree.
And so they are also finding that a lot of people who commit these kinds of acts, who go and shoot up places, are oftentimes on these types of medications, which to me implies that they are struggling with mental illness.
Right, right, so absolutely. I'm saying, how could you have stopped him?
I'm not saying this could be... Again, I don't have all the answers, and I'm not saying that there is something that could have prevented this. What I am saying is, moving forward, there needs to be more discussion mm-hmm. around mental health and just warning signs, maybe, right. or just, I don't know. I know that there was a referendum or something that was. Repeat or whatever Trump's line that mentally ill people are still allowed to go and purchase guns. I mean, things like that. Right. Just we can't prevent bad things happening. But what we can do is take certain necessary steps to ensure that guns aren't getting into the right hands. Mm. What we do, everything we possibly can.
Right.
You know, because looking back, did we do everything we possibly can? In Vegas, it's very easy for people to purchase guns. It's easier to buy a gun than to adopt a dog.
Right.
I mean, the process to adopt a dog out here in California, they come to your house.
Yeah.
But we don't go to people's houses before we give them a weapon to kill someone.
No, that's true. But what I'm saying is that if you want to commit a crime, you're going to get a gun. It doesn't matter how. There's so much.
Right.
There's
but so that much to illegal me implies stuff, you that know? There is something wrong with you. There's a mental. There's
absolutely.
A, right.
No, no.
So I'm
but
not
what
talking
I'm
about.
Is,
I'm, and that's the other thing is like. You're right. These people are still going to get guns from the black market, from whatever. But they're, you know, we need to be educated on mental illness and signs and decisions and people who are mentally ill. Maybe, you know, like there has to be more discussion around this because for whatever reason, mental illness is still very much a taboo, even though there are so many different types of advertisements and commercials on television about if you are depressed, take Wellbutrin. Like we don't know. There's no discussion behind this mental illness that's happening. It's just here's a pill. It'll fix everything, you
right,
know.
Right.
So that's all I'm saying. I mean.
Okay, I get it. I totally get it, you know. Okay, so let's bring in our guest now because we might as well. We covered everything personal that we're doing, so we might as well bring in our guest. We're joined by a lovely couple, Jim Christina and his wife Jerry. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Welcome back.
Howdy.
We're not that lovely, but thank you.
Yeah,
you're very lovely.
Lovely would not, it's not an adjective I would use.
In my opinion, you are lovely. Okay, well, your wife is lovely.
Okay. My favorite part is that you guys came down to Sherman Oaks, but you're dressed like you're on vacation in Hawaii.
We are.
I really.
Maybe that's where
they're like
going
physically is. Here, but mentally they're on the beach broadcasting.
I don't do Hawaii, but yeah, vacation is good.
I mean,
yeah.
You got the Blue Laguna. Oh, I don't know. Paradise.
You know, my martinis and stuff.
Yeah.
I don't have a flower behind my ear.
No, but you look like you
but
should.
But you could, you know? Yeah. You could. Well, welcome to the show, guys.
Thanks, man.
Jim Christina hosts a show called The Writer's Block here Thursdays at 7.
Yes,
right
I do.
Here on LA Talk Radio.
Yes, I do.
Tell us a little bit about the show. You've been hosting it with Bobby Bell.
We're on our third year.
Third year already?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Time flies, Jim.
Yeah, our show is we talk to writers of all kinds, screenplays and books, novelists, biographers, whoever the written word.
Yeah.
And just get their ideas of how they started writing and what their process to writing is, and sometimes a little bit about their stories. And,
right, right. And you're a writer yourself.
I'm a writer
and
myself.
And a reader. Yeah. Jerry, are you? Do you love books too?
No.
No?
No.
So
she's strapped with having to edit.
Have you ever wrote a screenplay?
No.
Okay. But do you know? Would you know how to?
Oh, I could probably figure it out in Flash.
Yeah. Yeah.
Maybe you'll help me write my screenplay.
Well, I would have to learn how to do it myself first. But
well,
sure,
write a story
Rachel.
First, Rachel.
Okay.
Write a story first, and then somebody can help you with the screenplay format.
That's true.
You know, but
to write the story, is it just you just write?
The story has to be a story is, you know, front, middle, and end.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you know the front, the start, and you know the end, you can pretty much fill in the middle. I mean, you know how you're going to get from here to here.
Okay.
Oh,
sometimes it takes a long time. Sometimes it doesn't. It's, you know, you have novellas, which are only maybe 120 pages, and then you have novels that are like 300, 285, 300 pages.
Right. Or more. If
or more.
Stephen King, you know. Right. The new one's, 700 pages or something?
Yeah. But, well, we've written some. We've read some by Mike Bond, who is a writer out of New England. And his books, I mean, the first one I read was, 585 pages.
Wow. Yeah, that's pretty thick.
Yeah, it's a lot.
But it's interesting to know that you already know the ending. So because I was thinking, the reason I'm not writing a story, because if I start writing the story, I don't know how it's going to end. That could go on forever. But it's good to know what the ending is going to be, right?
Yeah, you have to have an ending. I mean, you know, every story has an end.
Well, no, but what I'm saying is, do you have to know it in advance?
Or well, yeah, you have to have an idea of where it's going to go.
Right.
Now, Jonah Blue, that actually Rachel just got a copy of today.
Very lucky.
Done by Black Dog Books and Tuscany Bay Publishing, I might add.
Yes, which is
available on Amazon and all online booksellers. And if you go to your bookstore, you can order it. Jonah Blue started out with a beginning and an ending, and the ending changed.
So then you had to change everything in the middle.
No, I got to where the ending was coming up, and I thought, well, how am I going to end this? And I thought, well, I know what I want to do, but I'm going to change it. So I did. And then Jerry does the editing, and she read the last chapter. She goes, well, I'm not too sure. And then she read it, and she goes, okay, I'm good.
That's very interesting. So you do work together.
Yeah,
you
we do.
Collaborate
yeah.
on
yeah.
that stuff. Very cool.
Yeah.
What's your background, Jerry? Do you do writing yourself, too?
No.
No writing.
No, I'm really a pretty boring person, actually.
Doesn't seem like
she did write a children's
book. If she's going to try to come across as boring, I'm not going to let her.
Jerry is anything but boring, trust me. Well, you know, she does all the booking for our show.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh,
she's
cool.
A busy lady.
So behind the scenes.
Well, you wouldn't want to see my office because it's in utter chaos. But we've got enough people to fill to next December.
Wow, really?
Yeah.
A year
so
from this coming December.
She's yeah. been busy.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Our show is very popular,
yeah.
as you probably well know.
Yeah.
Wow. And we get requests from Canada, from Europe, from everywhere that want to be on the show.
Very nice. Very
yeah.
Cool.
We don't yeah. do Europe, but we do Canada.
Yeah, yeah. So so you get some different genres, different things mm-hmm. like
all
that?
Kinds.
Yeah. All kinds.
All
right?
kinds.
Very
yeah.
cool. You see, if you love books, you love reading, the show would be perfect for you.
Exactly.
You know?
And the nice part about it is unlike a lot of other shows, when the authors are on our show, we do read their book.
Right.
Cover to cover. And so when we discuss it with them, we can actually intelligently discuss
you
it.
You try
with
to
them.
Read
That's
the
true.
Books.
Yeah, yeah. No, I know, but since we have guests every day and I've got 7 books I'm reading
right.
already, I don't have time to squeeze
it
all in, you know?
Yeah.
So I try to read a little bit of the books that they send us or just to know the synopsis of it and let them mm-hmm. tell us a story.
Right.
You
know? I'm very picky about the books that I read because, I mean, I know that this sounds odd. I'm an odd person. But if I have a book that has too many words on a page and very small print,
it's hard to read.
I'm done.
Right.
I won't
yeah,
read it.
She won't
I know,
read it.
Me too.
Yeah.
So I used to be able to read a story that's in first person. I didn't
yeah,
like it, you
that's
know?
It's very hard.
I'm like, because you know he's not going to die or whatever, but also, I don't know, it's like the person's telling me the story. I want a third person mm-hmm. to tell me the story.
Mm-hmm.
Because first person limits you in many ways. You can't describe what another person thinks,
right?
Yeah.
right? Things like that. So it's different perspective. But I guess some stories have to be told that way.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Well, Craig Johnson, who developed the Longmire character, mm-hmm. that's highly popular on Netflix now, his theory on first person is that he wants his character to be able to tell the story. So when you read a Craig Johnson book of Walt Longmire, Walt Longmire virtually is telling the story.
Right, right.
As
right.
he goes. And it's first person. And it's kind of confusing.
Right.
And then when you go, well, he's telling the story of her, and her's telling her story, and so you have first person, second person, third person, and you go, holy crap. Where's
know,
the period?
Crazy,
well,
right?
When I edit his book, I've read each one of his books at least 3 to 4 times.
Wow.
Because
in
I,
different ways, right? One time to edit it.
Yeah.
Right. Well, you edit it at least 3 times.
Yeah.
Right.
And yeah. then when I get the proof, then I edit again. So by the time I get done, I'm you know, 3 or 4 times. But when you're reading in the first person, and the first time I experienced this, I'm thinking, somebody else talk, you
yeah,
know, because,
yeah.
oh, my God, there's only one person talking, and I want to see, I want to hear, I want to, you know, find out
so
what
other people are doing. So that's great feedback, huh, for the writer.
Yeah,
I mean, that's
is.
Amazing, you know, mm-hmm. because you don't, as the person, you don't want to do your own editing, right?
No, that's the worst thing you can do is edit your own work.
Right, right.
That just seems counterproductive.
Not only that, but you
but
don't
I mean,
see
I,
things.
I, but the thing is, the self-editing, I think, is important, but you need peer, you need someone else to edit it, too, because, like, you're just not, they're just not going to, you're not going to see things other people are going to see. But
right.
Like,
exactly.
You sometimes, you know, don't catch your own mistakes, right, you right. know? So that's why.
Or how people flowing. Will, inter- like, how you say other people may not in- see it this mm-hmm. or interpret it the same way, right?
Right. Yeah. Exactly. Well, that's especially true when you're doing dialogue.
Right. Yes.
Because when you're doing dialogue, you're going to interpret a piece of dialogue different than she is, and she's going to interpret it differently
than
I do.
It's the same as text messaging, too.
Right.
I mean,
yeah, right.
You know?
Yeah. So that's why you have to describe everything.
There's
else
no intonation
dialogue.
And dialogue in a book.
Right, yeah. Right.
So.
But I love books, man. I'm telling you. It's like everything. Well, there's a couple of new ones. And Dan Brown, the new Dan Brown book.
I love
I've got
Dan
it at
Brown.
Home. I haven't,
what
it, I haven't
wait,
read
what
it
is it
yet.
Called?
Yeah, Origin.
Yes.
And it just came out Tuesday.
I remember when I was in boarding school in Utah, and there was a lot of time to read there, and I just became like so obsessed with Dan Brown and like the Da Vinci
All his
Code
books,
because
huh?
it's just so this, the amount of research, and like I love things that I can like. That are not real, but like, okay, I can learn something from this book about
right.
history mm-hmm. or whatever, because there's so much quality research
yeah,
that
like,
goes into this.
Like things that could have happened.
Right, and it makes it so like, oh, this could be real, and it's haunting, and it's so cool. And what are the, he did like, not Andromeda Strain, that wasn't one. That
no,
was
that
King,
was Michael Crichton.
Or Michael Crichton. Right. The other, he did the Da Vinci Code, and then
Angels and Demons.
And Demons.
Right, and then there was Deception Point.
Deception Point I read.
There's Digital Fortress.
Digital Fortress I read.
Oh, that's the one I have at home that I haven't read yet.
Really? You yeah. should. It's very good. It's more like high tech.
Mm-hmm. I bought it, but.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. No, I read all of them.
Yeah.
Then he had, the last one he had was Inferno.
Inferno,
with
yeah.
With Dante and that sort of thing. And before that, he had the one.
Was Inferno good?
Inferno was very good.
I didn't
good.
Read that one. Do you have that one?
I do, yeah. I'll
can I borrow it?
Yeah, why not? But, yeah, I need to find it first. But, and then the one right before that, I forget the name, that was taking place in Washington, D.C., if you remember that.
Right.
Yeah. I can't remember the name, but we'll bring it up in a minute. Right. But at any rate, these become very big, you know. I mean,
they're
today,
kind of like X-Files-y in a way to me.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
Because
yeah.
the X-Files were like, they also took events in history that happened mm-hmm. and then made it fantasy in mm-hmm. a way.
Yeah.
He wrote a book years and years ago. One of his very first novels was called Flight of the Intruder.
Mm-hmm.
And it was about...
That was Dan Brown's?
Yeah, it was
really?
Dan Brown. Yeah,
I remember that they made it into a movie.
It was made into
with
a movie.
Dennis
yeah,
Quaid,
yeah,
yeah.
What was that one about?
It's about an A6 pilot that's a crew that they take off from this aircraft carrier and he gets shot down.
That's interesting. I just loved him because I remember when the Da Vinci Code came out, how much of a controversy this book was, and
right.
like the Vatican just like, you know, denounced it.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
And
yeah.
I think that's such good publicity, you know what I mean? It just worked more for
it
him
is,
because
it
became
is.
The number one book. And
I believed everything.
Yeah, right.
Everything about it.
Yeah, no.
Well,
really,
a lot of people did.
I think, but yeah. I mean, I think, who knows? I mean, who knows what, you know.
Could have
it,
happened.
Or if
did
it,
happen.
It, yeah, I mean, our society is built on secret societies. I mean, like, mm-hmm. and different groups of people. I mean, think about Las Vegas is built on the mob.
Yeah.
That's a private yeah. group that, you know, has mm-hmm. so many secrets. Like, who's to say, you know, the Illuminati and things like, who's to say? You know
yeah.
what I mean? Like,
yeah.
our money is printed with all of these, you know, these mm-hmm. symbols. And
right.
our whole government, I mean, they're everywhere.
The symbolism.
You know?
Yeah.
So.
Very interesting.
Who knows?
Yeah, yeah. But, yeah, so... A lot of books coming out. The new Stephen King he wrote with his son, Owen King, and it's called Sleeping Beauties. And it's a thick book with... He actually has to give you a list of all the characters in the beginning because there's so many. But I started reading it, and it's not bad at all, so I might actually commit to these 600-800 pages.
I can't
book.
Do Stephen King anymore.
No, really?
No. My favorite Stephen King book was The Stand.
I like
me
the
too.
Pet Cemetery. That's the only
Ooh,
one I ever
Pet Cemetery,
read.
Yeah.
That was amazing. But yeah, It was also a good one. Did you get to see the movie?
No.
The new one?
The story is amazing. Yeah.
I would have to sit in it because I hate clowns.
I saw
really?
The first
oh, yeah,
one,
yeah,
and clown. The first one was disturbing enough.
Yeah.
Actually.
That's true. But the clown is not really a big part of the book. It is in the movie, but that's just one of the ways that this being, this creature, whatever, whatever shows up, you know? It's not really a clown. It's and only
Sam,
Stephen King can.
It's very much a clown.
No, no, but really,
in the book, it looks like a clown and acts like a clown, that is
but
a clown.
But that's in the movie. That
talks and waddles like a clown. It is a clown.
In the book, it takes on so many different forms and shapes. And also, if you saw it, you saw that it says It Chapter 1. Which means there's going to be a continuing part to it because they left out half of the book. The book is about grown-ups that are going back and reliving what they did when they were a kid, right? And when they were kids. And this time the adults were not even here. I'm like, what the hell kind of stories is they left out the whole part? And then it's a chapter one in the end, and you realize, okay, so now they're going to be deal with the other side of this.
You mean we have to sit through the
another
chapter
two?
Oh my God.
I thought it was a good movie. Yeah. I love the book. That one's also over 1,000 pages, but The Stand, definitely, that was my first Stephen King book.
Yeah.
Very long.
I love how people like brag like, I re- like Harry when Harry Potter came out that it was like 7 million pages and they're like, oh, it's 100 million pages, and I'm like, it's all about what's in the book,
right?
You know,
but
like
it's a commitment.
I know. Okay, so you read a book with 500. Congratulations, you're a committed person.
No, no, that's not what I'm saying. It's not committed
I'm just
to impress.
Giving, I'm just giving you.
I mean, look, I have to think about it. I mean, I've seen some great books, but I don't get into them because it's too thick. And I'm going. That's a big commitment. I don't know. That
I think
I can
people
wait
should commit
end.
The same amount to a page to a book that's 5 pages as they would to a book that's 5 pages.
Unless it's a Tolstoy book, and then you got to be nuts to even open the cover.
Honestly.
9,000 pages of Anna Karenina, you know, or War and Peace.
I don't. Those are joke book joke humor. I'm just gonna laugh like I do. You guys are all book club.
But I think we established pretty much we all love to read here and books and stuff, and that's amazing. You
yeah,
know? We could sit here all day and talk about.
I just finished
books.
Two for this author that's on tomorrow night, and they're fantasy, and it's actually. Episode 1 and Episode 2. And I'm thinking, and it starts off confusing you, and then it just keeps you confused.
Oh, wow.
Through Episode 1, and then you think, okay, well, I'm going to go into Episode 2 now. Maybe it'll clarify some stuff. Nah, it just keeps getting
no,
more
confusing. Wow. How can you read so much?
I don't know. Believe me, I don't know how I got through. I went through Episode 2 in one day. I just said, I got to finish this.
Wow. You know who I would love to interview if we could somehow get him on here, even if it's a phone? Because I don't know where he lives. Do you know R.L. Stine? He did the Goosebumps series from like my childhood.
Oh, yeah, yeah, the Goosebumps,
and I love him.
Yeah,
I would
yeah.
love to just step inside
okay,
his
let's
weird
find
mind.
Him. Is he alive?
He's alive, yeah. Okay. I'm sure, I don't know where he lives, but like if we could somehow
we'll
just get
him
on, that would be such like a childhood goal for me, so I could just fangirl out.
Yeah.
You know?
Find him, look him up.
I'll find him.
What was really cool is that, you know, there's some authors that you never think you're ever going to get on your show because they're like
too big
in the clouds,
right?
You know, they're
right.
the guys, James Patterson.
Yeah,
right.
So where Jerry comes in my office one day and she goes, "Guess who we have going to be booking on for next year?" And I said, "Who?" She said, "John Sanford." Now, I don't know if you know who John Sanford is.
He's always in the airport books.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Well,
like
John,
those are like famous, you know, when you walk by in the airport.
John
Brooklyn,
Sanford
you know.
Is on our show next April.
Oh, wow.
Oh, very nice.
I'm going.
He's big in LAX.
He's big everywhere. If you go into an airport and there's not a John Sanford book, it's not an airport.
Right, 100%. Right. Then you're not really traveling.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right.
Well, actually, I got the agent sent me this information on an author who grew up in Africa, and she wrote a book on apartheid, and I think this is her first book. Mm. And we're already into next year, and I said, I don't know, I can keep your information and get back to me in December, and I can let you know if I can book. And she gets back to me, she says, how about if I throw in John Sanford? I said, when can you be here?
seriously.
That's good. But, Jim, obviously you need more than 1 hour a week, you know? Well,
I read 5 days a week.
No, no, you show. You're not able to get all the guests.
Oh, I know, huh?
There's so many. You know who I had once on the show was Dale Brown, and he's a big author. He writes a lot of books on flying.
I prefer his brother. Dan.
I don't know if it's his brother.
Oh.
Yeah.
Don't tell him I said that.
But no. But anyway, Yeah, he's pretty cool. He was like a big pilot in, mm-hmm. in the Air Force and stuff, and wrote a lot of books. Still does, but at any rate, moving from we'll go back to books and stuff. But I wanted to bring this up because this is part of our lives, okay? And I don't mean to scare anyone and stuff, but what they're saying statistically, it's coming. California prepares for the next big earthquake. And what they're saying, and this is kind of scary, they're saying on the average, we've been having earthquakes here about 20 to 25 years, and they're saying it's been 23 years since the last one in Northridge. So they're saying we're due for one.
Actually, it was 94. 94. So 90, yeah, 23 mm-hmm. years, yeah.
Right, right.
What is the best, where is the best place to be during an earthquake? Outside?
I was thinking about it.
Inside?
Let me tell you. Outside, first of all.
Okay.
And right. I think on the beach is probably good, unless it's a tsunami, right?
Unless it's a different, right. Depending on what kind of, well, the tsunami, though, that takes a, I feel like that takes a second.
Yeah. No,
well, tsunami only if it's offshore. If it's onshore, you're not going to get a tsunami because it's going to be going the opposite direction.
Right, right.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah. But you never know. You know, that's what I'm saying.
So,
I mean, they have tsunami areas like along the coast in South Bay, signs that say this is a tsunami zone, you know, so like evacuation zone or something.
So the best place to be is outside.
Outside where there's no power poles, there's no buildings, there's no
where
nothing.
I was thinking,
you know, actually on a cliff, overlooking the beach. So then you're like, there's nothing around you, and the tsunami is probably not going to get that high.
But what if the cliff breaks
and then the
off?
Cliff collapses.
Yeah. Right. That's the worst place. Well, that's the worst. I'm pretty sure that's the worst place to be.
Bending over to kiss your ass goodbye.
Yeah,
because
no,
the cliff is not going to collapse. Where is it going to go?
to the beach.
Yeah.
That's going to be liquid at that point.
Yeah. I'm not sure. Off a cliff. Well,
I don't know that we want to think
sounds
about
like
this.
You
shit.
Should stand at the edge, you know? Just stand yeah. there at the edge of the cliff.
Don't yeah. get a safety line. Right. Just stand there at the edge.
You know? Yeah, right. But, yeah, so that's a good question, you know. I guess in the middle of the desert is good, but who's going to be there when the earthquake hits, you know?
My philosophy, my idea on earthquakes is all these little earthquakes we have all the time.
Right.
Helps relieve the stress off
let's
the big
hope
fault.
That's, yeah, we hope so, but. But
our buildings are all, say, earthquake, pretty earthquake.
Supposedly.
Oh.
And not all of them.
Not either. All of them have been retrofitted. So.
Right, yeah. They're saying that pre-78... they had wood frame soft story buildings, which means that the first story was substantially weaker and more flexible than the stories above it. Wow. So, and lacking walls of frames at the street level. So there you go, you know. So these older buildings wouldn't last. But thank goodness that, you know, some of the high rises, many of those, will probably withstand it.
Yeah.
But I don't know, man.
So they're saying it's coming.
If you saw the movie San Andreas, I don't recommend it to anybody because it's so realistic as to what could happen here that you don't even want to think about it.
Well, my ex-brother-in-law lived over here off of Rinaldi.
Yes.
And where the epicenter
that's
of the
Northridge. That's in the valley here where we are.
Yeah, off where the epicenter of the Northridge quake was.
Right.
And his house went up 12 feet.
Really?
And slammed back down and broke in half.
Wow.
He split his pool open, took his wall down. He had a big crevice in his backyard where his pool used to be.
Yeah.
Wow.
And his house virtually was broken in half.
Really?
Yeah, and he was right there where, because the Northridge quake went up and slammed back down instead of side to side.
Right.
But also Simi Valley had its own earthquake at the same time.
Right.
Because the houses east of us, because we're right in the middle of the valley, they were built on sand. Mm-hmm. So all of those houses up there, well, most of those houses up there on some streets, they literally were rocked off their foundations.
Really?
And they had to be destroyed, and I'm assuming they rebuilt up there. I don't know. I haven't been up there for a long time. But, yeah, we felt it. And if it weren't for the – we actually had a crack down diagonally down the middle of our family room. And if we hadn't had that crack – our house, our
the entire
foundation.
House would have
wow.
been.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. So it was a good thing that you had the crack there.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I was living in Camarillo at the time, and I had just poured a cup of coffee, 4:32 in the morning.
Really?
And,
what are you doing
and I was,
for?
Well, I get up that early every day.
Oh,
and,
my God.
And I watched my coffee. All of a sudden, it started shaking. It started bouncing across the counter. Mm-hmm. And by the time it dropped into the sink, there was no coffee left in the cup.
Really?
But that's the only thing that happened.
Yeah, yeah. You know, the amazing thing for me was that I had moved my family, my wife and two children at the time, to Vegas a week before the Northridge, and we lived in Chatsworth, I mean, which is next right door.
Yeah.
So we didn't feel the earthquakes. In fact, the fact of the matter is we felt it a little bit in Vegas. It was that strong.
Yeah,
but obviously we didn't feel it like they did
here.
Well,
it was, what, a 7.9 or something?
They're saying a 6.7, actually.
Yeah, actually, so I think
a 7.9 would be destructive, Jim.
Well, I think that they fudged those numbers because they would have to give more aid and relief if it were a higher number. This is that conspiracy theory that's been going on for a long time.
Yeah.
What do you mean?
Well, if it's higher than a 7, and obviously there was a lot of destruction, they would have to give us more aid.
Oh, so they purposely said it was less.
Yes.
You never know. Yeah. I mean, honestly, you just part of me is like, there is evidence from our history where we haven't been told the whole truth on things that have happened. That's 100% true. Yeah. I mean, and you know, like a good docuseries. I don't know if you guys have seen The History of America from Oliver Stone. It's on Netflix. It's really good. He goes through each. Do you like Oliver Stone?
No, but I like The History of America.
Okay, it's really well done. Yeah. It's really well shot. I think it's like 10 episodes, and it goes through pretty much periods of time and just things like people who were kind of in the background who weren't really necessarily highlighted, kind of like who participated in different parts of, you know, situations throughout history that, you know, played a part, an important part, whether good or bad, and just kind of filling in the spaces that maybe the regular media doesn't really tell us about, you know. So it's really well done, and like I said, I agree. I mean, there's certain, you know, it's just little things like that, just for the bottom line, right?
Mm-hmm. Right. No, absolutely. Jerry, what is your background? Did you grow up here?
I grew up in Culver City.
Oh, really? Yeah. But here in LA area, right?
Yeah. Wow. You went to high school here?
I went to high school in Culver City, yeah.
Oh, nice.
Wow, very cool. Yeah. What was it like growing up in L.A.? I mean, obviously, it changed quite a bit, right, over the years.
Well, if you're talking about L.A., I consider L.A. and Culver City separate.
I mean,
we're all apart. Yeah.
But it's all the same area.
Well,
though,
we're in L.A. County, but L.A. City, the boundary line was down the middle of our street.
Right.
So I had to go to Culver City school, which meant
but let me ask you this. If you go out of town, where do you tell people you live?
Culver City.
Really? Not Los Angeles?
No.
Really?
That's like people in, like, okay, so there are certain people who say they're from Vegas, but they live in Henderson. But, and then people in Henderson own that they live in Henderson.
Really?
And won't say they live in Vegas. Like, it's different.
You see, because if you go overseas, you say Sherman Oaks, it's like, who knows Sherman Oaks? But they know L.A. And plus, we have the L.A. culture here. You know, it doesn't stop at Culver City.
Well, now I say Ventura County because people go, where? And Simi Valley, okay.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
So I just say Ventura County.
Yeah. Oh, I've heard of Simi Valley. Where's that?
Yeah.
East end of Ventura County. Ventura County. Let me see. I've heard of that too. Where's that?
Mm-hmm.
You know? Yeah, yeah. But these are all areas around L.A., for those of you who are listening from outside of L.A. And, you know, the interesting thing is people like to listen to us because we are in L.A. And
area. Everybody
wants to know what's going on here. Mm-hmm. You know, Hollywood, all that stuff. You know,
which is right across the street.
Yeah.
Primarily.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
Now, so, Jim, and where did you grow up?
All over, but mostly in California.
California, too. So you guys are not really... Have you traveled a lot together?
I did.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
You were in the military?
I was, and my father was.
Right.
Yeah.
And you traveled quite a bit.
Yeah.
Where did you guys meet? Do you remember?
Yeah.
Okay.
Do you remember?
At a restaurant that no longer exists, actually. Eric Erickson's.
Actually, it does, but it's under another name.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
On the Pier in Ventura.
Where?
On the Pier in Ventura.
Ah, really?
Yeah.
At a restaurant you guys met there?
Yeah.
You hit on her?
Yeah, primary.
Wow.
Okay, I didn't read the small print.
Neither did I, apparently.
Well, she had no idea she was getting the size of asshole that she actually was getting.
Oh, God. Well, you guys could only see the cover of the book at that time, right?
Oh, yeah.
You could see the inside. Yeah.
I mean, after 15 years, you know, we've pretty much read the whole book a couple times.
Really?
And little did he know how opinionated I was.
That's true.
So is that how long you've been married, 15 years?
15 years next month, yeah.
Oh, nice. Wow. Congrats.
Very nice.
Thanks.
Congratulations to you. Do you guys have kids from...
Yeah, but not together.
Not together, right.
God, no.
We never talked about your kids, have we?
My kids, my son is in... one of my sons is in Lake Havasu City. He's a chef.
Oh.
I have another son that is going to be getting out of Washington State Prison I think January or February.
Congratulations.
Yeah. Well, yeah. He, obvious, you know, 9 pounds of heroin. Wow. Personal use.
Really?
Yeah.
Personal use.
Yeah.
Oh, my
no,
God.
No, not really. He was dealing.
Yeah. They probably saved him from himself by putting him in jail.
My daughter, apparently, right now, is in Sonoma, Arizona, I think. I don't know.
Yeah.
She has been in Australia. She has been everywhere. And right now...
No contact?
We don't. No, I don't know. She's got pissed at me for something. I don't know.
Yeah. Kids, man.
Story. Every day is a different story.
You know, and so one of these days she's going to wake up and she's going to, well, yeah, I better call dad. How old is she? 32?
Okay. Yeah.
Wow. And then I have my niece that she might as well be my kid, that she's in Atlanta, Georgia. She actually was in the studio with me one night.
Really?
Yeah.
Very nice. Very nice. So the kids are all over the place.
Yeah, they're pretty much spread all over. Joe's in Washington, Arizona and Georgia.
Yeah. Wow. How long has he been in jail?
I don't know.
Really?
No. We just started communicating. We didn't talk for a long, lot of years. You know, kids don't like parents that have an opinion.
Try coming from a judge.
No. I totally
understand.
Your mom is a judge and your dad is a district attorney.
She was a mental health court judge. She was literally judgmental.
But God bless her, she put OJ away.
I know, right? She does private mediation.
Okay, because my daughter-in-law used to work down there for a nonprofit. She was a victim's advocate.
Oh, wow. Maybe in Vegas?
Yeah.
Okay, they probably... Yeah, my mom was part of starting the first mental health court judge or mental health court in Las Vegas. I don't know what it is now or if it even exists, but she was a part of that. Huh. So yeah, because before they had mental health court, they were just putting people who were mentally ill in jail and in prison, and then the prisons and the jails were becoming overcrowded. They weren't getting the proper help or rehabilitation or therapy that they needed, and so she established this, and then what it did was people who had come through the court, they would a doctor would evaluate them, find out if they were competent or incompetent, obviously, to stand trial, and then based off whatever the evaluation was, they would go and get the help that they needed versus, you know, going. Like, there was a very famous football player a couple years ago, I forget which team he played for, but he either took a gun or did, I don't know if he shot at someone, but he committed like a crime that was, you know, but it turns out he had schizophrenia. He like disappeared for years. I mean, after all those brain injuries, you know, some of them just you know, react differently. So she ended up getting him help by getting him linked up with a doctor, and then got him on the right proper medication for whatever it was, and now he lives at home with his family on like a farm or something, and it just changed his life. I mean, he was a homeless man roaming the streets, you know, committing crimes, and he was a very famous pro football player. ESPN did a whole story about it. She always gets the weird pro football players. Some she helps, some she doesn't. Well, here's another thing. OJ's out, and he's living in Vegas now.
Yeah.
So potentially we could be shopping at Trader Joe's together, you know? Hey, just picking up some OJ.
Yo, juice!
It's funny because they're saying here, his lawyer was saying that he's like happier than ever, you know? He's in good spirit. I've never heard him so upbeat, he says. So there you go. Maybe he's going to be a model citizen.
No.
No, huh?
No.
Except, so what happens if he runs into your mother?
Well, I've always kind of... I know. I mean, my she just... I don't know. I mean, if I ever run into him, I would go up and say hello, probably.
I mean, I don't know if he would... Does he shy away and say, stay away?
I don't know. No, I don't know. I mean...
I didn't do it.
No, I don't know. But, like, if I ever meet him, you know, I'll ask him if he'll come on our radio show.
Well, TMZ
followed
his daughter around trying to get her to say something. She was at Trader Joe's in Vegas.
Really?
Yeah. Wow. Well, he was going to go back to her house in Florida, but you have to make that... he didn't want to make her... Wherever he ends up, the address has to be public information. He didn't want his daughter's address to be public, so a friend of his volunteered in Vegas to take him in.
Yeah. Well, I thought you couldn't leave Vegas. He's on parole.
No, he could leave Vegas. He got permission, but when you're on parole, where you live is public information. I don't think he wanted his daughter's house to be...
Well, he was also in prison in Lovelock. I mean, that's like in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah.
That's like nowhere.
Right.
So, and yeah, it's, you drive by it, I think, when you're driving out to LA or from Vegas or whatever.
We stopped there for the night when we were going up to Missoula, Montana, when my mom was dying and my sister and I. And we stayed at this Lovelock Motel, Lovelock Inn.
That sounds lovely.
Where is it at again?
It's
What's the place called?
Lovelock.
Oh, Lovelock,
Nevada. Really? Yeah.
And I lived there. I never heard of Lovelock.
Yeah, Lovelock.
It's not. It's not like a vacation destination.
Right. No.
Literally,
no.
Where
no,
people
I mean,
go
there's
to
small
prison.
Towns also that you know many few people hear about. But that's one.
Yeah,
it's a wide spot
exactly,
in the road.
Exactly. Exactly. Okay. Like, but in Nevada, most people never hear of Pahrump.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, except now everybody hears
Pahrump. Well, now, you know, but you can, you know, Pahrump sits right outside of big, like, literally.
63 miles. My parents used to live there.
Yeah,
right. Is that where the prison is?
Pahrump? No, that's where
Lovelock is where the prison is.
Lovelock is where the prison is. Pahrump is where the shooter is from.
Prison is. Pahrump is where all the whorehouses are.
Right.
Lovelock is north, isn't it?
North.
And also...
Northeast.
Also where Harry Reid is from is where the cat bunny ranch is.
Yeah. The chicken ranch.
Yeah, there is
Sherry's.
Nevada.
My dad used to take people out there. We'd go to visit Pahrump, and he'd proudly throw everybody in the car and take them out to Sherry's.
Really?
So you go in the gift shop. They actually have a gift shop there.
Really?
Yeah, go buy a menu and all kinds of stuff. Yeah.
Oh, wow. I thought you'd buy their underwear or something.
Nope. But they sell like coasters and menus and all kinds of stuff.
I'm sure they sell a lot of things.
Wow. So yeah, Vegas is its own place. You can't compare it with any place in the world. You know, there's something to it. You know, it just to me, it's. I don't like it as much anymore. Maybe because I grew up there and I know it in a different way than it is now. Mm-hmm. Because, like now, the roads are so different. You know, like Spring Mountain Road. You know how it goes, like. Over the freeway and all that stuff. And it used to be such a small street, you know? So, and things like that. So I'm like, I get lost there.
It's still an easier place to live. I mean, it's not that hard. It's big, though.
It's
big. Not, though. It's really not compared to living in L.A. is huge.
Right.
Vegas, to me, the only thing about Vegas that makes it seem big is you have to drive everywhere.
Right.
Yeah.
That's the thing. But
yeah.
it's easier to get around there. Well, that's because in Vegas, everything is so spread out. Here,
right.
It's just because the traffic is shit. You know what
I
mean?
No, but it's also spread out here, you know? I mean, the thing is that L.A. is really big.
Yeah, but when I'm not
everywhere
really...
you go is far.
Not really. I mean, like I work down in Venice.
Right?
Without traffic, it'll take me 24 minutes to get from Venice to Hollywood. But with traffic, it could take me over an hour.
Right.
Do you get what I'm saying?
I
but
do.
Like kind of the same as in Vegas. It takes, you know, it'll take you 20 minutes to get to the other part of town. You know what I mean?
Well, you really have to take the freeway because if you take the service street, you're screwed.
Right.
But not all the areas have freeways, you know, if you go to the west side, right? There's no freeway.
I mean,
there.
Vegas is pretty big. You're right. But there's just, I guess for me, it's just I'm used to going to the same certain, like, you know, I go to Summerlin, I go to the Strip.
Well, Vegas is okay as long as you're not trying to drive on the Strip. And then good luck with that.
Yeah.
And in the nearby areas.
And then you're, my God, you take your life in your hands.
I remember as a child going back east with my mom and dad and sitting in the back of the car driving down the Strip when there was nothing on either side.
Right.
But you could see the Las Vegas sign was there.
Right?
And McCarran Airport was a double wide trailer.
Right.
And that was it. And one
runway. The Flamingo was right there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the Sands. That was the only, really the only places.
Neither of those.
Yeah. Rachel, what high school did you go to?
I went to a couple.
Which one?
I went to Bishop Gorman for my freshman year, which is like super famous for all the football stars and everything. And then for sophomore, junior, and a little bit of senior, I went to Faith Lutheran, which is up in Summerlin as well. I mean, Bishop Gorman used to be down on Maryland Parkway where like homeless people would just walk onto the campus.
Oh, really?
You know? But they moved it to the suburbia part of town once they got all that alumni money. But so I went to religious schools because Jesus was a better mentor.
Yeah. Better choice.
Did it help you?
Well, at the time.
No, I mean, it was a very weird time. I mean, one, going to religious school as a Jewish girl who was born Jewish, you know, going to like an evangelical school, and you know, that was pretty shocking. But then in Vegas, you know, it's just all, you know, no wonder I came out this way and want to do comedy because none of it made sense. And
yeah.
I mean, for me, it was funny because, growing up, I went to Jewish day school for 10 years. So all of my, you know, all of my curriculum and education was in the lens of Jewish and Judaica or whatever. And then I get to Catholic school and they're like, yeah, there's a New Testament. I'm like, you're telling me there's part two? Like,
there's a part two.
I'm like, what are you talking about? Like, they lied. You know, I had no idea. I feel lied to.
It's called It. Part
right.
Two.
Exactly. It. Yeah. It was just really, you know, it was really interesting.
Well, we had Jewish neighbors for like 20 years, myself growing up, and I always thought I was Jewish until my mom would drop me off at a Methodist church and told me I wasn't Jewish.
Right.
And then when we moved to Simi Valley, my kids grew up and we lived next door to a wonderful Jewish family.
Yeah.
And my kids wanted to be bar mitzvahed and I had to tell them, you can't be bar mitzvahed. You're not Jewish. You can be if you want to.
Right.
You know.
Yeah. That's hilarious. But,
that's funny, man.
Well, you know, you always know you're Catholic when you go to, when they pass around the plate, you know, the offering plate. Uh-huh. Not only do you have to tie 10%, but you have to pass around the offering plate, and everybody's in there making change.
Yeah. Hilarious.
That's very funny.
Cheap bastard.
Well, everybody, we were joined by Jim Christina and Jerry Christina. The time is almost over. If people want to contact you guys to book, obviously you guys have to wait 2 years to be on the show.
No, right now they only have to wait a year and a half.
A year and a half. Yeah. Oh, my God. Wow. Do you know where you're going to be a year and a half? How can people plan so far today?
Hopefully we're going to be sitting in that studio right over there.
Yeah, I know. But, you know, I mean, things change. You never know.
They do.
You know?
They do.
So, because I'm thinking, like, where am I going to be? Like, I can't even make a plan for a trip 2 months in advance. But I'm like, I don't know where I'll be at that point.
I'll tell you though, Sam.
What if I'm busy? I can't go.
Working on our third year on the writer's block now, of all the guests that we've had, and we've had a bunch, we have never had a cancellation.
Yeah, that's true.
Never had a cancellation.
Wow.
And we have booked people a year in advance, and they have not canceled.
Yeah. Well, you know why that is? Because you're keeping them in suspense. You know, you're teasing them.
We remind them.
Yeah, yeah.
We send them email. Jerry's really good about that. She sends them a couple weeks before. She goes, remember, you're going to be on the show this week. And,
right.
You know, and they
very
send her back.
Nice.
And say, okay, cool.
And so how is everything? And quickly about your kids. How many do you have?
I have two.
Two.
Mm-hmm.
And where are they now?
I have one that lives in Port Wayne, Amy, and works for Dynacorn Classic Bodies International. And the other one is a Las Vegas Metro police officer.
Ah, did you know that?
Who's on his way to Romania.
Right now.
Almost.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So he knows my dad.
Yeah. He was
really?
Yeah.
Of course. My dad's he's the district attorney. He's their boss, very closely with the boss, right?
Oh, I'm sure Josh has seen him. I don't know if he knows him, but I'm sure he's seen him.
I mean, he probably knows who he is.
Absolutely.
I don't think there's anybody in Las Vegas that doesn't know who your dad is. Especially with that really great TV show he had.
Yeah. Will not
Sin City Justice.
Yeah. Oh, then it got renamed to like Las Vegas Law. It just should be just a symbol.
Tune in next week for Sin City Justice.
Yeah. Now he's on the radio. He's always doing something.
So if people want to publish their books through you.
If they want to publish through me, all they have to do is send me or us an email, and they can write us directly at jchristina@TuscanyBayBooks.
Tuscany Bay Books.
Tuscany Bay Books.
And what's your latest book?
My latest book is Jonah Blue, and actually, Rachel has a copy of it.
I got a signed copy. Don't get confused.
Looks very nice. Awesome. So what's that about?
Well, you kept telling me about cover, so I made sure this one had a good cover.
This one does have a great cover.
It
tells you exactly what the story. It's a mountain man.
Mountain man.
And I'm going to be starting a new book here pretty soon. I don't know exactly what it's going to be about, but I am working on one with my partner in Tuscany Bay. We're writing one together, which is a little difficult.
Yeah, right. It's partnership.
Yeah, but it's still you don't know where he's going, and then you have to reread the chapters that he sends to write your chapters, and then you have to send him the chapters. And then
so why are you doing it then?
Because we wanted to.
Yeah,
see if we could do it.
Good
reason
enough. How do you argue with that? When someone says because I want to, you can't argue with them.
Yeah,
because that's just what it is.
Yeah, we're working on a book right now by a teacher over at. What's the name of the college?
I don't know.
Citrus College over in Glendora.
Okay.
And it's a book about paranormal, and so we're working on that one for him right now. And we've got the Jack Del Rio series coming out with Richard Palinelli as the author, and we've got all kinds of stuff going.
Sounds good. Well, if you guys are into books, reading, writing, anything like this, these are the people to contact.
Yep.
Jerry, Jim, Christina, thank you so much for joining
us.
You're welcome. Thanks for having us.
And listen to the writer's block. There's no block for those writers, though.
No.
Thursday, 7 o'clock right here on LA Talk Radio. That's 7 p.m. Pacific. So always make sure, because not all of you are in L.A. Thank you all for listening.
Rachel,
thank you as always. And we'll see everybody tomorrow.
You're listening to Sam in the Morning with Rachel, exclusively on LA Talk Radio.